Hello everyone, Adam here. It's been over 6 months since we last released an episode of the podcast and then announced we were going on a short break. As it turned out, it was rather wishful thinking because shortly after that, both our lives became pretty chaotic. But we're back and we're going to be releasing episodes every fortnight, beginning with this episode we actually recorded a little while back. There are a few audio issues, but we think we've resolved them now. But if you do hear an echo from time to time, you know why. Whilst we were on hiatus, we heard the news that Christians, socialists and medievalists in the UK had lost a dear and committed comrade, Deborah Elizabeth White. I got to know Debbie a little bit through the student Christian movement, SCM. My most enduring memory of her is when we volunteered together for SCM at Greenbelt in 2016. I never knew Debbie half as well as I would have liked, but I've often thought about the deep conversations we had together in the SCM tent in particular, as we waited for potential sign-ups. So I wanted to dedicate this episode to Debbie. May she rest in peace and in power.
Welcome to Bread and Rosaries, a podcast about the UK, Christianity and the left. I'm Ben Molyneux-Hetherington, my pronouns are he, him, and I'm joined as always by Adam Spears, whose pronouns are also he, him. How are you doing, Adam?
I'm pretty good. I'm a bit offended that you haven't noticed that my pronouns are actually he, him, slash comrade, but that's fine.
I feel like there's been a concerted effort to make it weird to call people comrades.
Yeah, and we need to bring that back. Not the weirdness, the actual, like, you know.
Well, if we bring it back, it's going to be weird. We're weird people. That's going to happen. But all right. Do you want me to introduce you as Comrade Adam Spears moving forward?
People might think that I'm actually called Conrad.
Look, I can call you Comrade Adam Spears, or I can call you the Reverend Dr. Adam Spears.
Let's go for the former.
Okay. Are you gonna I don't know, it's a long while off, but are you gonna use doctor if you get a PhD?
Probably depend on the context, to be honest. But like most of the time, probably not.
But I don't know. I think Reverend you have to use, so it doesn't really matter.
Except that there was someone at Synod trying to get rid of all of that stuff.
If all of that stuff is having vicars, then I am on board.
You are a bad Anglican.
Oh, I am such a bad Anglican. I did tell someone the other day that the only reason that I'm not considering repenting and returning to Rome is I'll get thrown out of the house that I live in. And that was only like 80% a joke.
Hang on. Returning to Rome? You?
Yeah, man.
How have you? No, like, you've done, probably not. You've done like a 180 in the last in the last month.
No, I'm definitely not a Catholic. But if there was a base ecclesial community locally, I'd probably go and join it. So I guess maybe I might become a Catholic if I move somewhere where they've got the cool commie Catholics.
I respect that.
Maybe we just need to create some sort of like cool Marxist Anglican thing.
I mean, people are trying. You know, not enough, but there are some who are trying.
I can confirm that they are not trying in rural Norfolk. Well, I say they are not. I am, but it's really just me. We should probably introduce the podcast at this point to say that today we are talking about Adam's favourite church, Hillsong, and all the wonderful things that they're doing.
Oh, yeah. If you'd been talking to me like 10 years ago, I wouldn't have said they were my favourite church, but it would have been a bit more accurate than now. Come on.
I think this is a good point for us both to confess that we are recovering Hillsong fanboys to greater or lesser extents.
I love how you have to get that last bit in as well, to greater or lesser extent, where you're like clearly just like implying that you are further along the road than I am.
No, I just mean like in the actual heyday, the peak of my Hillsong fanboy, you were more of a fanboy at your peak.
That's true.
I'm not trying to say I'm further along. I am, but I'm not saying that.
you're not saying that, but you are saying that.
It's true, but it wasn't what I was trying to communicate. Watched a documentary in the Storyville series of documentaries the BBC produces that is all about Hillsong. But for those of you who are uninitiated, Adam, as the official Hillsong fan of the podcast, what is a Hillsong?
Okay, that wasn't the question I was expecting, to be fair. I mean, I guess a Hillsong is probably a song from Hillsong. I don't know. But Hillsong Church is a church that started in Sydney in the 80s by Pastor Brian Houston. Now, they were, until 2018, part of the Assemblies of God wider family, but they split with the Australian branch of Assemblies of God in 2018 because for many years now they've been trying to build a kind of global brand spreading outwards. I think they've got, is it 28, as they put it, campuses worldwide now. So they are a mega church kind of, I guess you would say, a kind of a mega church corporation, really.
Yeah.
And and I think their first church outside of Australia was in London, which I have visited many times when I was a Hillsong fanboy, and I've visited a few others as well. Being Assemblies of God, they would have said that they were Pentecostal. I'm not sure that they would say that quite so much anymore. I'd say more sort of charismatic evangelical. If you are a Christian in, well, pretty much anywhere, you've almost definitely sung one of their songs on a Sunday
morning. Yeah. I would say that's their big thing, or always was, is their quote-unquote music ministry. So Oceans, I believe, is the most popular Christian song of all time, and that is...
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It starts with My Jesus, My Saviour, which was probably their first big hit, to the extent where they used to be called Hills Christian Life Centre, and the music aspect was called Hillsong, and they changed the name of the church to Hillsong to capitalize on the popularity of their music. Now there's a bunch of different aspects of the music. So you've got kind of main Hillsong, you've got Hillsong United, which came out of the youth ministry, and I think you've got another one that is the younger ones.
Young and Free, which is now the youth ministry one, because yes, Hillsong yes. United sort of split got from old. The youth ministry and and started touring the world. So now they're like almost the touring Hillsong band.
And for, you know, I was certainly a big Hillsong United fan for a long time in my teenage years. I know, Adam, you, when we lived together, I would come into the kitchen and you'd be playing Hillsong on the CD player, which I'm not sure what's worse, the fact you still owned a CD player at that point in time or that you were listening to Hillsong.
To be fair, like, CDs were still, they weren't quite as useless as they are today.
Jesus weeps for Gaza. He sees the pain and suffering of the 1.9 million people who have been forced to leave their homes without access to nutritious food, clean water, decent shelter. He hears the cries of the 25,000 orphaned children. He is with all who mourn the 250 people killed every single day. Christians for Palestine UK is a group of Christians who are calling for an immediate ceasefire in Palestine. We don't pretend to have all the answers, but are united in our prayers, hope and action for equality, peace and justice for all the peoples of the Holy Land. Together, we are organising a Christian presence at the National Marches for Palestine and local Days of Action, where we've been joined by siblings from Sabeel Kairos, Pax Christi, and a whole range of Christian churches. We urge you to join us to act in solidarity with the people of Palestine and call for a permanent ceasefire and just peace. The Very Reverend Canon Richard Sewell, Dean of St George's College in Jerusalem, says, "I warmly welcome the newly formed group, Christians for Palestine UK. Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank need to see the solidarity of Christians in the UK, and they will be encouraged to see your commitment to stand up for them in their time of terrible suffering." To find details of local actions or to join the Christian bloc at a national march, follow Christians for Palestine UK on Instagram and Facebook, or email christiansforpalestineuk@gmail.com. Join us as we call for a ceasefire now.
No, that's true. We're going back a few years, but not as many as you might think from it being a CD player. Spotify definitely was a thing. So yeah, and even if you have never heard of Hillsong and are not interested in it, their music is massively popular across churches that disagree radically with them. So, you know, they are hugely influential, particularly through that.
And it's important to acknowledge how that's come about as well. Because, yeah, okay, like, clearly their music, whether we personally like it or not, it's very slick. You know, it's very well done, right?
Yeah.
But part of the reason, you know, there are a lot of churches and a lot of Christian bands that do that, that are slick and well done. Part mm-hmm. of the reason Hillsong has become as big as it has is because of the way they set their copyright and made it so that anyone could sing and release versions of their songs, right?
Yeah.
And so that's how they've become so big.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there are other, you know, Bethel being the other kind of big Christian music empire have kind of built up on the same thing. But Hillsong are the original and still the biggest, most effective version of it. And, you know, if you go to a Hillsong on a Sunday, you are going to see a full band on stage, usually like four guitars, an almost impossible number of singers, most of which you can't actually hear, but are just kind of there to show that there are singers there.
Eye candy, Ben. They're eye candy. Let's be honest here.
No, genuinely. Like, yeah, yeah.
There is no one on any Hillsong stage ever who isn't a total hottie. And they do that deliberately.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And they will often put on, particularly for their big events, there will be stage productions. Hillsong London meets in the Dominion Theatre. So that's a functioning West End theatre in London, one of the big ones, and they just rent it out on a Sunday.
Well, you know who, I don't know what's showing there now, but you know what was showing there for years at that theatre?
Lion King?
No, well, maybe it is now, I don't know. No, it was We Will Rock You.
Oh, of course it was, yeah.
So, you know, we are talking, as you say, a proper, one of the best theatres.
Yeah, no, absolutely. A huge theatre. And they would put on, you know, performances, shows. You'll have lights and dancers and all sorts of theatrics happening. And that's very much part of what they do, is that it is not just, you know, I don't want to say good music, but effective music, shall we say. But it's also a performance, yeah. And it's visually stunning.
In the UK, the church isn't quite as big as it is in, you know, places like Sydney, obviously where it started, and I would assume some of the American places as well, because obviously
there's New York's a culture. Very big.
There's more of a culture of Christianity, I guess. A lot more people who are Christians, who are active Christians. So London is big, but it's big by UK standards, right? It's not big by sort of global megachurch standards. The other thing that they do, though, and I was at the very first of these, so was it like back in 2010 or something? So they put on, back then, they put on a 10-year anniversary service for their being 10 years in the UK at the O2 Arena. And it was like capacity, right? Full. and put on this massive, massive show. And I think I'm right in saying they do that every year now, probably as one of their conferences.
Yeah, potentially. They certainly regularly put on big events around the world. You know, Hillsong Conference is absolutely huge. And, you know, again, is extremely theatrical. So, yeah, I think that kind of gives you a bit of a flavour of Hillsong. They are one of the biggest church corporations in the world, one of the most influential even in the UK. So we watched this documentary about them. Adam, what did you make of the documentary?
So I thought it was, in some respects, quite sensitively done. They didn't go all out one way or the other when they could have, but it did mean that sometimes I wasn't entirely sure quite what they were trying to do. That said, you know, obviously it did deal with some pretty big issues. It did at times sort of seem to have an opinion on things. So I thought it was an all right documentary. It could have been better, but I think it's, you know, it's been helpful for uncovering some of the stuff for people who might not have been aware of it before.
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff in there. I think I'd agree with you. There's some cheap shots in there that were a bit unsubtle. And like, if you're trying to create a narrative, that's fine, but you'll be a little bit smarter about it. My absolute favourite was, so first of all, someone mentions the fact they moved to London from Wales, and it immediately cuts to a shot of some sheep, which is just a horrid cliche. But then even better, it cuts from the sheep, does a smash cut to a big shot of the congregation at a church. It wasn't a subtle bit of visual messaging, but yeah, there was some interesting stuff in there. And you mentioned they talked about some big issues. One of the strange things about it is they kind of buried the lead a bit on the two big Hillsong stories and kind of kept it back to the end. We're not going to do that. We're going to start with them, at least partially because they're the two bits we're maybe least interested in terms of what we're trying to talk about today. So we'll start with Carl Lentz, who was the pastor of Hillsong New York, which was probably their most publicized branch, a bit of a celebrity magnet. There was also stuff about Selena Gomez, Chris Pratt, and in particular, Justin Bieber was a regular attender and pal of Carl Lentz.
Baptized by Carl Lentz.
Yeah.
Was it in some sports players' swimming pool or something?
No, it was in... It's a super tall NBA player's bathtub because it was big enough to get the two of them in. Carl Lentz is very much the legal property of the Shitty Christians podcast. They've done a number of bits about him, including a whole episode. So if you want to know more about him, go and listen to them. But basically, it came out that he'd been having an affair. There was some extremely weird stuff going on. He kind of lied about who he was to her, but then there was also him telling the person he was having an affair with that God was speaking to her through him, because, you know, once you've got in the habit of using that as a grift, you can't get out the habit that easy. Lentz is a complicated figure. As I say, Shitty Christians dive into it a bit more, but he is essentially both a perpetrator of some quite dodgy stuff and also a victim of that internal culture of Hillsong that kind of used him and spat him out. There's loads to say about him, but we're not going to say a load more about him. Obviously, he's the most high profile because he's pals with all these celebrities and was quite an adept self-promoter. But yeah, the other big story comes with a trigger warning for sexual abuse, particularly sexual abuse of children. So if you want to skip this bit, do skip forward. So, Adam, you weren't quite right in what you said earlier, in that Hillsong is kind of started by Frank Houston, who is Brian Houston's father. So Frank Houston's a Kiwi, so he's living in New Zealand, pastoring churches. I think he was one of the head honchos in the Assemblies of God in New Zealand. Then he comes across to the US and starts a church in Sydney. After a little while, Brian Houston goes and starts a church plant. And then after a little while longer, quite suddenly, Frank Houston steps down as the church pastor, retires, and Brian Houston takes over both churches and creates them together as what becomes the Hillsong Church. It subsequently emerges that the reason Frank Houston stepped down and retired so suddenly is that there had been allegations that have subsequently been proven true that he had sexually abused a young boy in his congregation over a number of years. The documentary actually interviews the now man who had been raped by Frank Houston as a child. It is quite an intense bit of the documentary. It seems all but certain that Frank Houston, who is now dead, has a history in New Zealand as well of abusing young boys. This is all very unpleasant, obviously. It all came to light a few years back. And in particular, what came to light was that Brian Houston knew about it at the time and did not report it to the police. He is accused of paying off the victim. He says that he would have called the police if the victim who was making the accusation had still been under 18. However, the victim was over 18 when they made the accusation, so he chose not to call the police, apparently because that's not what the victim wanted. Brian Houston has now been charged with essentially covering up child sex abuse by the Australian police.
There's one thing in that I want to pick up on quickly there. I think it's probably fair to say, not so much that he might have paid off the victim, but that he did, because he was questioned about this in the investigation that was undertaken by the Australian government. And I don't remember the exact quote, but they asked him about this and why he hadn't mentioned it to them. And he said that he had forgotten about the conversations, which seems to me an admission of guilt, essentially.
Yeah. As you said, he was interviewed by the Australian Royal Commission into Child Sexual Abuse, which took place in 2014, and found lots of issues with Hillsong and its reporting of potential sexual abuse. There have been a number of accusations that abuse is, frankly, endemic at Hillsong. We could spend a whole episode talking about the issues of abuse at Hillsong. We are intending to do an episode on child sexual abuse in churches at some point in the future, and so we don't want to kind of cover it now for the risk of kind of not being able to do that subject justice. But I think it's a really important part of Hillsong that it is recognised that, you know, in many ways the founding story of Hillsong starts with the sexual abuse of a child. So yeah, that is Hillsong. So we're going to talk about a few things in the documentary, and I want to start with something I think was quite telling, which is that one of the people in the documentary, for the most part, I'm not going to distinguish between the people in the documentary, because frankly, when it comes to like the pastors and stuff, I struggle to tell them apart. They're all basically cookie cutter versions of each other. They all dress the same and look the same, and they're basically the same person. So I'm not going to bother distinguishing between them.
Well, let's just say that they're almost all white men. Let's just leave it at that.
Oh yeah. We'll get to that one as well. Anyway, one of them makes a comparison to Lego and talks about how his parents play with Lego, he play with Lego, and his kids still want to go to Legoland and, you know, watch the Lego movie or whatever. And he talks about it as being a brand that innovates generation to generation. And he is talking about that as a way of talking about how they feel Christianity should be and how Hillsong is kind of innovating Christianity for a new generation. But I think it was extremely telling with about something that's really important to understand in Hillsong, which is that first and foremost, it is a brand.
Yeah, and I think that comes across, I mean, that comes across as soon as you step into any Hillsong church. Everything's very, very slick. Everything's very shiny. All of their materials are, like, almost everything is produced in-house as well. So, like, yeah. Which, yeah, as a brand, you're probably going to want.
And I think the thing is, when it comes to brands, brands are an idea that exists in late capitalism, really. And if you are embracing the concept of being a brand, you are inevitably going to embrace the philosophical underpinnings that come with that. And so I don't think that Hillsong are a church that believes that political conservatism is what's taught in the Bible necessarily. I think they are a church that starts with branding and therefore imports a political conservatism as part of adapting that approach.
Okay, yeah, I was going to disagree with you until you sort of said the latter part of that. Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I mean, it's the same thing that happens with anyone who has power and wealth. At the end of the day, if you've got power and wealth and you have a very individualistic worldview where it's all about what you can do and how much money you can make, then you're going to end up leaning that way politically. And Hillsong definitely do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there was a brief bit in the documentary of them having Scott Morrison, who is the Prime Minister of Australia, and is potentially a bit Boris Johnson-y. Is maybe there's a comparison there.
Yeah, but I mean, he's no Tony Abbott.
I'm thinking in terms of his persona, he's got a slightly buffoonish man of the people, despite being quite posh, thing going on. And he is not actively hard right, but he is friends with people who are.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably fair. The thing is, by Australian political standards, that means that he's far from the worst.
Yes.
but he's still awful, right? Let's be honest. And we should also say that although he's probably the politician sort of most associated with Brian Houston in particular, but Hillsong Church in general, there have been plenty of other politicians, particularly from the Liberal Party, though not mm-hmm. only from the Liberal Party. The Liberal Party being the worst of the two big parties in Australia. I think people can often find it difficult to work out why parties have particular names. So the Liberal Party would be the equivalent of the Conservative Party in the UK.
Yes.
But to be, let's clear it up. They are both Liberal Conservative parties in that they have liberal economic policies and conservative-ish social policies. But, you know, it sort of...
I would say the big difference is, if translating to the UK, it's as if the Conservatives were in a permanent formal electoral alliance with UKIP, because they may always create a government in association with the National Party, which is the hard right party in the...
Yeah, and let's be clear about what we're dealing with here. So when we hear people like Boris Johnson parroting Nigel Farage's talking points about implementing an Australian-style points-based immigration system...
They love saying that phrase.
But this is where that comes from, right? This comes from... And yeah, Labour have done this. The Australian Labour Party have sort of done this stuff as well, sure, just like our Labour Party. But the, you know, this Australian-style points-based system comes from politicians like Scott Morrison, who one of the things he did was criticise, when the then Labour government were in power, he criticised them for paying for the families of migrants, I hate using that word, but migrants whose boat sank en route to Australia, to come and attend their funerals. He thought that that was the wrong thing to do. The government shouldn't have paid for the families to attend the funerals of their dead loved ones. And so that's the kind of rhetoric that we're talking about here. Very, very staunchly anti-immigrant rhetoric that kills people.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk now about one of the people who's in the documentary, which is a bloke called Ollie. He is the guy from Wales who we are now associating forever with sheep. He's a care-experienced person. His father was an alcoholic, and he had issues with kind of drug and alcohol abuse when he was living in Wales. Ended up with some police issues and got sentenced, but a suspended jail sentence, I think, was what he got. And he basically moved to London to escape and very quickly found himself at Hillsong. They mention in the documentary that one of the interchangeable pastors, whose names I do not know, mentioned that when he first came, he used to give out cocaine to the people at church, which I think is the best answer to the question, what would Jesus do?
Wow, man. No, I don't think it is. Do you think Jesus, like, cocaine would be the drug of choice for Jesus? Dude was poor.
Yeah, it is a bit of a posh boy drug, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Jesus is probably more into poppers, you're right.
Wow. Mate, I was going to go mushrooms, but no, let's stick with poppers, I guess.
Yeah, so he basically... Yeah, just moving on from that. Once again, I remind you that I will not be relying on the Church of England to pay for my personal income for the foreseeable future. So I can say this stuff, but you might want to be a little more careful.
Yeah, you can say the offensive stuff, and yeah. I'll just sort of pretend. I'll feign disagreement and shock.
You can do the Richard Hammond on Top Gear role of pretending to be shocked and disappointed in Jeremy Clarkson. I don't like that I just made myself Jeremy Clarkson.
I hate Richard the Hamster Hammond, right? Because he's not a real hamster, is he? What he is, he's a man, right, who's been able to carve out a best-selling literary career off the back of his own inability to drive safely. Yeah? Because
Ollie, the bloke we were talking about, then basically talks about how he didn't have any friends in London. And what he finds in Hillsong is a ready-made friendship group. He now has a lovely girlfriend who seems very supportive of him, that is also a Hillsonger, and seems, as far as I can see, to kind of base his social life around the church. And I think this is something that actually a lot of churches, you see it, particularly the larger ones, but I think, you know, Hillsong in particular have made a real art of being the sort of place you go to make friends. And I think it's really telling about particularly a place like London, which can be a really isolating place. You know, it is in some ways the epicenter of kind of capitalist social alienation in the country. And so what a church like Hillsong does is prey on it, really, prey on the fact that there are people who are lost and lonely, and the social structures that might have supported them once have collapsed. So they find themselves having a social life when they've not been able to make friends previously based around the church.
So I think you're right for a few reasons. I would push back a little bit because I think a lot of churches do that, and it's not always necessarily a negative thing. Right. So like my personal involvement in Christianity really properly began when I was at school and having an awful time. Right. And the only place I found acceptance and people willing to not kick the shit out of me was at church.
Yeah.
And I think I think we have to be really careful, like how we do that, because there is potentially an element of, as you put it, essentially preying on the weak. And I do think that's something we have to think about. But also, it's definitely true that finding that kind of place can be absolutely transformational. And so I guess I want to be careful with that.
I totally agree, because we don't want to stop being places for the social good as churches. I guess the difference for me is the way that Hillsong doesn't empower people when they join. Instead, it gives them these ready-made friendship groups, but expects them to stay in their place and we'll get onto this, give them their money. And I think that's a really important distinction, is that rather than seeing making human connections with people as an inherent good in and of itself. It is merely a tool for the expansion of the church as a whole.
And it comes back to that brand thing again.
Yeah, absolutely. Something else that comes up in it is the role of volunteers. When I first went to university, I lived with someone who was very heavily involved in Hillsong London, and they would be involved in the music for the kids' arm of it. The kids' arm being larger than most churches I've ever attended. I was living in Watford, essentially, at this point, which is on the outskirts of London. So he would have to get up at like 5:30, 6 in the morning. And I was a student at this point, so anything before midday was an early start. And he would get back at 9, 10 p.m. And he would have basically spent the day either commuting or working. He'll take breakfast with him. He might grab a quick lunch while he's there. And he'd grab some food in the station for eating on the train on the way home. And that was just the normal thing. Because they put on four services, all of which have incredibly high production values and are all bloody long. Church services shouldn't be longer than an hour. This is the hill I will die on.
Well, when the sermon itself is almost an hour long, you know you've got a problem. Sermon should be 20 minutes max, and at 20 minutes you're pushing it. 12 minutes is a decent time, I think.
Yeah, I've never preached for more than 15 minutes, and frankly, I'm increasingly not convinced anyone should be preaching at all.
I don't know about at all, but it's a pretty bougie thing. One normally man stands at the front and essentially gives his opinion. And you kind of have to take it all in. It's a captive audience.
And it's not very effectual.
And the very same goes for Ezekiel, which brings us back to our starting point, the nine tenets of constancy.
Damn it!
Well, I seem to have lost my place. So I'll start over.
Aw, for the love of crumb cake.
Going back to the volunteers, you know, they're doing these crazy long days. And basically there is a bit of a very strong, I want to call it a class divide almost, not in maybe quite the traditional way we think about it, but there are the pastors at the top who make good money and, as is made clear in the show, basically abuse their expenses accounts and buy nice clothes.
Allegedly.
But even if that's not true, which probably is, but even if it's not, they are clearly living good lives. A quick glance on their Instagram will tell you that, you know, the way they dress, you know, they talk about the Instagram page Preachers and Sneakers, which basically is just photos of megachurch pastors next to the price of how much their shoes cost, which is usually four figures.
Yeah, well, I don't know if we're probably going to talk a bit more about the financial stuff a bit later, but to quickly put this in perspective, the pastor of Hillsong London, his salary, we assume it's him because it doesn't say exactly who it is, but only one person received this salary at Hillsong London. So we're going to assume it's him.
It's not the cleaner, is it?
No, well, that's it. So his salary was between 160 and 170,000 pounds.
You know, for a bit of context, most vicars earn somewhere between 24 and 28,000 pounds, plus they get a house, which is pretty well paid. Even without the house, it's more than I get paid. That's decent money.
As much as some C of E vicars might complain, by no means all, you know, and there are times where it's difficult and it varies as well. To me, that's like double anything I've ever earned, like not including the house, right?
And like the amount we're talking about this pasta being played is six times that. So this is serious big money. So yeah, you get the people in charge who are making the money, doing very well for themselves. And then you get two kind of groups of people below them, one of which are the lower level staff, who aren't getting paid that much because lower level church staff very rarely do. And the volunteers who aren't getting paid anything at all. And those two groups of people, by all account, do the real work of the church. The people that head up stuff are mostly figureheads. They're writing preaches, palling around with their celebrity friends and marketing their books. But the actual work is being done by both the lower paid staff and the volunteers. They introduced the guy in charge of Hillsong LA's youth thing, and he described himself as a full-time volunteer and said he worked 87 hours a week. And he later says that he spent $3,000 of his own money taking young people out for Chick-fil-A. So we're talking about someone who's not even getting paid, but is essentially paying money to keep this church running while the people in charge make big money and live lavish lifestyles.
This is not a problem that's unique to Hillsong. The issues around volunteering and fair remuneration for work are kind of endemic to Christianity in general, I think.
Absolutely. And I think this is something that really applies to the whole of the UK. I think there's two things. One is, if you want to work for a church in any capacity, you're going to have to spend some time working for free, usually in an internship, to get the quote-unquote experience you need to then get an employment there. So that's really rife. But lots of places function off people doing year-long internships, often as their gap year before university, where they don't get paid and volunteer for the church full-time. And in fact, I know the new wine discipleship year, you have to pay to be an unpaid intern. So this is something we see across the board. And obviously there's volunteering. Churches are always going to run off volunteers. And that's, I think, good. You know, volunteering is a good thing to do. But when you're asking people not just to volunteer a few hours here and there, but to go unpaid while doing a full-time job for them, or even paying to do a full-time job for them, I think you're in a very different territory there.
Well, yeah, and let's look at it this way. Those things that you've just described, those practices and processes, are exactly the same things that enable rich kids from university to go and get a job, and you know, an internship at daddy's firm or whatever, and those of us who don't have rich parents or contacts to go and languish somewhere else. It's the same thing. And this is why it's so dangerous to allow capitalism to be essentially the guiding principle of our faith.
Yeah, and Hillsong is a deeply capitalist church, both in terms of the branding, but also the way it functions. Those senior pastors are senior executives in a multinational firm. You know, the whole thing functions in a deeply capitalist way.
Yeah, and maybe they wouldn't use exactly the same words, but this is something that they would agree with. And it's not just Hillsong. Other churches would agree with this as well, including certain parts of the Church of England. But they will see business, they do see business as a good thing, as a fundamentally good thing, and it's their Christian duty to participate in that.
So we mentioned money already, and I think that's something that's quite important in Hillsong, both because their pastors get paid so much, but because in many ways Hillsong is a profit-seeking machine. I mean, it's not for profit, but it is trying to suck in as much money as possible, and the profit accrues to the people in charge.
I think we should probably differentiate a bit, because obviously there are some like shitty business practices that are clearly going on. There are a lot of accusations around the use of credit cards to throw lavish dinner parties and so on. And obviously there are astronomical salaries. But we should also say that the profit that they make that doesn't go towards those things is held as a reserve, which currently stands at just over £8 million, I think.
So it's a big money thing. But that money comes in the vast majority from tithing. And I think that's quite an important thing to acknowledge, that the money that's getting spent on £1,000 shoes is coming out of the pockets of the people that attend there. The fireworks and the smoke machines and the dancers and, I mean, just the hiring of the Dominion Theatre is coming out of the pockets of the people that attend there. And yes, it is probably a lot of rich people there, or people that are at least relatively financially well off. But also, you know, London is a city with very extreme poverty, and there will be plenty of people there that are living paycheck to paycheck or benefit claim to benefit claim, who are giving money that they probably shouldn't be giving.
Yeah, and I think as well, one of the things that's really important to think about is the influence of prosperity gospel on Hillsong, because there was a time when Hillsong preached prosperity gospel pretty directly, not quite in the same way perhaps as certain televangelists like Creflo Dollar, who's worth about $147 million, which, by the way, Brian Houston is worth $12 million, which is gross, but it's not Creflo Dollar levels of gross.
I can believe God as long as I want to. If I want to believe God for a $65 million plane, you cannot stop me. You cannot stop me from dreaming.
It's important to sort of mention the role that the prosperity gospel has played traditionally in Hillsong's preaching, and that that was sort of addressed. They received a lot of criticism for that, and they sort of toned it down a bit. The thing is, I was under the impression that they had pretty much, I mean, I didn't necessarily like the way they talked about money, but I thought they'd moved away from sort of overt prosperity preaching towards a more kind of give to the poor and also make this run and stuff, which, you know, has its own issues. I actually took my then girlfriend to Hillsong Edinburgh, because there is a Hillsong in Edinburgh, a lot smaller than London, but I kind of wanted to show her. So my ex-girlfriend is indeed a Buddhist, and I kind of wanted to show her what Hillsong was like. By this point, I was far from being someone who wanted to go to Hillsong, but it was an interesting kind of experiment in
interfaith dialogue.
Yeah, let's call it that. I was going there as a kind of anthropological case study. I can't think of the right word, but anyway, I took her along. She lasted about 12 minutes before she was like, I hate this, can we go? So they got this young guy up front. And before they do this before every sermon, right? They don't call them sermons, do they? Really? Every talk? I don't know.
Message,
yeah. Well, they do this before every message. They will have about a 5-minute talk by some underling about how bloody brilliant it is to give to the Lord of your finances.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I've worked in a church that tried to kind of model itself a little bit after Hillsong years and years ago. And it's really interesting because you kind of see a little bit under the skin of what the thinking is. So you have the 5-minute message about how important it is to give money. And some of that money, to be fair, some of that money is spent on good stuff, but a lot of it isn't. The thing is, the whole message is always going to be something like, it's really important to give to the poor, to make this church run well. What I wasn't expecting was the heavy emphasis that I thought had disappeared of, if you give to us, if you give to God, God will bless you. I thought that had gone. I thought Hillsong had actively tried to exorcise that from their message. It was there, plain as day. in Hillsong, Edinburgh, and my then girlfriend hated it, rightly, and we left. I don't think that's pioneered by Hillsong, that approach, but it's something that they do at every service. And not only that, but they hand around, you know, like when you're in church normally, you might have like a collection dish or maybe even a little bag for your collection.
Yeah.
At churches like Hillsong, they hand around buckets. And the reason they hand around buckets is because there are studies to show that the brain reacts to larger vessels for collecting money by putting more money in.
Wow.
So there's deep sort of psychological thinking, like manipulation, essentially, going into this stuff.
Yeah, and I think, you know, prosperity gospel is in some ways the logical end point of this sort of thing. There's kind of two ways of going with it. You've either got to tell people it's a responsibility, something they should do, or you've got to tell people that it's going to be good for them to do it. That's the two kind of approaches. Prosperity gospel is the extreme version of that last one, but it's the exact same logic. If you're saying something good will happen if you donate, then what's the difference between that and fully fledged God will bless you back if you give, you know, so much money towards my private jet? And I think it's worth talking about tithing, which is something that comes up, which is the idea that you should give 10% of your money, like they did in the Old Testament, to your church. And I'm just going to say it, that is horseshit. You should absolutely not give 10% of your money. Even if we're being quite conservative in your scriptural reading, that's pretty clearly a form of civic tax, because there was no division between civil society and the religious institution. So that 10% was the entirety of tax. And you already pay tax. So don't worry about that. Obviously, beyond that, there's a responsibility for the rich people in the church to be paying for the church. And you know what? If you're on minimum wage or you're on benefits, you shouldn't be paying a penny towards the running of your church. And the people who are well off should be the ones funding this thing.
Yeah, and let's be clear. You're not going to find me very often saying the Bible is clear on this, but the Bible really is clear on this. Time and time and time again, you see, particularly in the New Testament, you see the condemnation of the rich, and particularly the rich for doing specific things and not giving all their money away. I mean, James 5 obviously is one of the greatest passages that's ever been written, where it's just all like, woe to you rich people for holding back the wages of laborers. And you know, Jesus himself tells the rich to give all their money away. So the foundational principles behind this are just entirely contrary to what I guess we would call the gospel.
But I mean, the foundational principles behind this are what we said earlier. It's capitalism. You know, it takes the underlying assumptions of capitalism, as the cliche and the movie tagline goes, greed is good. And it's not quite greed is good, but it's money is good. You know, you can serve God and Mammon.
Mammon.
I know. You can serve God and Mammon.
Sure. Why not?
But, you know, like, actually, that is the underlying principles of what's going on here, is these are fundamentally capitalistic churches. Whether they're telling you it's a responsibility or something that will give you blessing, if they are demanding a percentage of your money, that's just capitalism. It's not about religion.
I will agree with you on everything except one point. I have seen plenty of church leaders even saying that, like, just justifying actual greed, just like even the very word. They will explain things away quite clearly so that they can capitalize on things. I mean, there's they showed some in the documentary, actually, just church leaders sort of like money, you know.
Yeah, literally
doing that.
The other thing I wanted to talk a little bit about was to actually compare them to their brothers and sisters and gender non-binary siblings in Christ over at Holy Trinity Brompton. Because I think they represent, to an extent, the two types of evangelical Christianity in the UK. Holy Trinity Brompton being a bit more old school in some ways, a bit more upper middle class. I mean, then Brompton, which is quite a posh bit of London, and God help us, a distinctly Anglican version. They are very much part of the Anglican Church.
Yeah, well, yeah, they are, but like, they're also, I think there are probably a few people in there who don't realise that.
And I think I'm probably talking, you know, not liturgically or maybe even theologically, but culturally, the historic culture of the upper middle class Anglican is very much represented there. And I think HDB might be a slightly gentler version of it. I don't think it's a good version, but, you know, there's some similarities there. But ultimately, HDB feels more like the Americans' concept of what British people are like. It's more reserved. It's less aggressive and in your face.
There's a lot of crossover, a lot of crossover there. They are different in some fairly particular ways. But you will find that a lot of people in the more sort of HDB network or style go and do stuff at or with Hillsong, and you'll find that they do stuff at and with HDB, probably to a lesser extent.
But I think swimming in the same pool is I think the point I was driving at. Hillsong is just a more blatant version of what we see in the water. And, you know, the fact that Hillsong's music is so influential across all sorts of churchmanships in the UK tells you, whilst Hillsong London is a massive church, there is not a network of Hillsong-affiliated churches in the way there's a network of HDB-affiliated and HDB-style churches across the UK. Hillsong is still massively influential in the UK church. And, you know, songs were a very effective way of teaching theology. And the ideas that underpin Hillsong also underpin a lot of Christianity in the UK.
So I've got a question for you. Should we retire every Hillsong song from every church, even if it doesn't say anything that's bad, just because it's Hillsong?
So my answer is yes, and there's two reasons for that. Well, three. The first is they're shit. But I think my two actual points would be, one, money goes back to Hillsong. Not loads, but you do have to pay your CCLI license, and then you register what songs you've been singing and what songs you've printed out lyrics or chord sheets for. I know, because I do this for my church.
For Hillsong?
Well, yeah, for any songs you do, and now the Hillsong money does go back to them. I don't know. Historically, it might have been different, but now you register your Hillsong songs as well, and they get a chunk of that money. So when you sing songs, you go and give money to a church that has an endemic child abuse problem. But secondly, when you sing their songs, you teach people more theology than you do when you preach. And the ideas, I mean, the only saving grace of them is they're so poorly expressed that they're not always that clear. But the ideas and the language and the culture of Hillsong is communicated through these songs. And I don't want that in my churches.
I think the takeaway, the biggest takeaway from this podcast is that you hate Hillsong songs in particular on every conceivable level.
That is true, but I would not want to limit that to Hillsong songs. I think they're worse than, you know, what the Soul Survivors and the HDBs and whatever are producing in the UK. But it's a matter of degrees. The overall issues are exactly the same.
We're going to have to do an episode on CCM at some point.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I think we've both talked before about being people that are more comfortable in contemporary expressions of worship music, whilst also hating all actually existing examples of contemporary expressions of worship music.
Well, yeah, I mean, to put it bluntly, and I assume you feel the same way, we're both autistic Christians, so we're never going to feel entirely comfortable in any expression, no matter what it is.
I have never felt comfortable in my entire life.
Even in the privacy of my own home, when no one's around, uncomfortable.
Am I sitting wrong?
Well, there's one other thing I want to talk about quickly, if we can, on this sort of cultural influence, in that In this documentary, there's a guy, I can't remember which particular, it's one of the, I think he's in one of the American churches, I think, who, I don't know if you remember who I'm talking about, but it turns out towards the end that his family have, his kids have a genetic condition.
Oh, yeah.
That is very painful for them, where they have to have like boils lanced, and where they apparently live with the equivalent of third degree burns most of the time. And the way he talks about that, I think, is really interesting and kind of instructive in a sense when we're talking about Hillsong and its influence and the influence of this kind of certain kinds of Pentecostal theology,
yes,
and charismatic Christian theology on the church at large.
Yeah, I noted this down as well. So I remember what he very specifically says is that after spending a lot of time almost kind of complaining to God about it and praying for healing, he kind of says, well, now I view it almost as a blessing because it's forced me to spend more time, quote, seeking after God, which is just about the grimmest way of thinking about your child's disability as I could imagine. It only exists to improve your personal relationship with God.
Yeah, so that is pretty fucking grim, and that was gross, and I saw that as well. But it goes one step further that I think is slightly more grim, where they had their kid, this poor little boy, quoting scripture and justifying it. And basically, they all more or less agreed and basically stated out loud what shouldn't ever be said out loud, in that they believe that if you have enough faith, God will heal you. And I can tell you, as someone who's spent almost my entire life with one form of disability or another, even if it's not explicitly stated, the implicit nature of that message in Christian worship and Christian theology is very, very damaging, because you spend a lot of time wondering, on some level, am I just not quite good enough? Do I not have quite enough faith for this? Why am I not being healed? And that is just gross, absolutely gross. And even if you don't state that theology out loud, as it was in this documentary, that is still present. And that is still the kind of influence that churches like Hillsong can have on the church more widely.
And as you say, those ideas are never expressed out loud, but they are in the waters. If you are a charismatic or Pentecostal or evangelical church that isn't secessionist, some form of that idea is usually present. Even if it's not as direct and explicit as that, the idea that if you do the right thing, if you have enough faith, if you tick the right boxes, God even just might do a healing is so damaging and so dangerous. And that is an idea that I think is really prevalent in weakened but still present forms in churches all across the UK.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the difficulty of it is it's hard to have a nuanced conversation on what we mean when we talk about healing in Christianity, because some of us are disabled, right? This really impacts some people very directly. So it's really difficult. It's really frustrating. It's a conversation that needs to be had, but it's not necessarily one that people are comfortable having, I think.
Yeah. And maybe we should talk about this more at some point. But when I think about that sort of thing, that is probably what has pushed me into a place where I kind of don't believe in any sort of supernatural healing.
Heretic!
Yeah. Well, that's not the only way, is it? Let's be honest.
It's not even the worst way.
No. I think that'll do us. Adam, it's been an absolute pleasure. Do you still have any Hillsong albums?
Well, this is everyone on Spotify now, so I don't know. They're probably still in a playlist, so I think they pop up from time to time, like a song here or there, but I normally skip them.
Occasionally, particularly when we're driving home to see Sarah's parents around Christmas, which we haven't done for a couple of years, we used to play some absolute classic Christian songs in the car for the nostalgia value. But now I even feel guilty about doing that because I'm giving fractions of a penny to Hillsong.
I suppose you are. Well, if you're doing it through Spotify, if you've already bought the albums, or if you're downloading them by, let's say, special edition,
uh-huh.
then maybe...
Which you should do. If you're going to insist on listening to them, do not give them any money.
This is parody. We do not encourage people to break the law. Definitely do it. Download them. No, don't. Don't.
Definitely don't. Definitely don't.
Definitely don't.
You can find us in all the usual podcast feedy places. You can find us on facebook.com/breadandrosaries. We're on Twitter @bread_rosaries. And you can email us breadandrosaries@gmail.com. Do get in contact with us. We always love to hear feedback, thoughts, criticism. Adam, where in the world can we find you?
You can find me most places @commiexian.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for today, Adam. I guarantee you that I will not be playing us out with any Hillsong music.
Oh, not even Oceans.
Definitely not. That song sucks. Anyway.
Right? 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 How did that one become the big one?
Sub Coldplay nonsense. We'll see you all next time.
See you later.
Jonah went down to the docks to flee from the wrath of the Lord, but the mark on his forehead was visible to everybody on board. They threw him down to the water, but he did not drown. I'm on a balcony in Mobile, Alabama, waiting for the wind to throw me down. Now the Lord told the great fish, crashing through the curtain, and the plant grew, but it withered. It shriveled up and turned brown. I'm on a balcony in Mobile, Alabama, waiting for the wind to throw me down. Lord, if you want, keep me safe and warm. Don't hold back your fury.